Hello, everyone. Welcome to Locked On Suns, part of Locked On Podcast Network. Today's always your host, Evan Sider, and joined by co-host Brendan Kleen. You can follow me on Twitter at eSider. You can follow Brendan on Twitter at BrendanKleen14. Also, make sure to follow our Locked On Suns Twitter page if you aren't already. I know we're getting a lot of followers over there daily, so I appreciate the support. Go over and follow at Locked On PHX Suns. Let's get into our episode today, Brendan. It's our usual Monday through Friday episode. Today's Thursday, following the Suns' four-game winning streak. They have a day off for the next 2 days, Thursday and Friday. They play Saturday against the Wizards in. Against our former teammate Trevor Ariza, so that has some juicy storylines to follow there. But we're going to go over actually the four-game winning streak. I know some listeners of us want to talk about this, so I think it was actually a good idea. So we're going to hone in a little bit on the four-game winning streak, what trends we're seeing, what's really sticking out to us, and see if it's sustainable or not. So, Brendan, let me toss it your way first, because I think just your general thoughts on the streak so far and how you think it's going to hold for the Suns.
Yeah, obviously, really impressive. We've talked about it plenty of times now, just how it wasn't necessarily surprising because we saw this out of the team before Devin Booker went down with that re-aggravation of his left hamstring injury and missed a few games, really took away the chemistry that they had just started to build. Not winning games, though, at that point. And I think that's been the biggest change here for this team, obviously, is we've gone every day back and said, oh, it's been this long since the team won this many games. And four straight last was in March 2015. So pretty incredible. Obviously puts into perspective not only how they put it together this year, but what a big statement it is for this franchise in general that's, you know, wailed away in pretty bad circumstances for quite a long time. And so I know the fans are clearly excited. And that's why we wanted to dive in on exactly what's been making this win streak happen.
Yeah, just to clarify, I think after the whole situation last week with involving Robert Sarver and the possibilities or not the possibilities of moving the team or whatever, that's really died down over this win streak. So winning really does cure everything. So let me toss it back your way, because I just think there's so much interesting notes that we can go over with this, because not only is Devin Booker looking legit, but I was just looking at stats for the Suns, and I didn't realize TJ Warren's averaging 25 points per game on 50% shooting from both field goal percentage overall, but he's also hitting 50% of his threes. So that's pretty really rarefied air there.
Yeah, he's at 50-50-93 right now, which is wild over these past four. But I think it's also useful just to go through their kind of big picture numbers for this stretch before we go into players too. Ninth offense in the league from an offensive efficiency. That's just the points the team is scoring per 100 possessions. They're ninth there. Fourth in defensive efficiency, the points they're holding opposing teams to per 100 possessions, fourth in that category. And that's good for the third net rating overall. And it is a relatively small sample size, of course, we know that, but does show what humongous efforts this team has made to improve on both sides of the ball. And I think, you know, one of the big buzzwords I've been seeing across the league, really on Twitter and some of the attention that's starting to be paid to Phoenix, ironically, this road trip is kind of a terrible little wrinkle in this whole thing, because the fans don't get to go see. They've got to see the first two, but now they're on the road and it's the holidays. But it's identity, right? I think that's been the biggest thing. And I've seen it mentioned a lot of different places. This team just kind of looks like it's forming around a defense first, energetic identity. And not only is that crazy based on what we saw earlier in the year, even recently in the month of December with some lackadaisical performances right out of the gate from this squad from an effort standpoint and an energy standpoint, but kind of crazy too when you think about the fact that an Igor Kokoschkov team is coalescing around its defense and not its offense. Not that, you know, he doesn't care about defense. Of course, I'm not saying that. He talks about it all the time just as much as anything else because it's been such a weak point. But it is kind of crazy to think about the fact that that's where this team is getting its burst from.
Yeah, I pulled these numbers from this four-game winning streak as far as hustle and deflections go, because I think that's like the idea you're getting to, Brennan. Just all that hustle and energy on the defensive end. Guys like D'Anthony Melton and Kelly Oubre in one game, Mikal Bridges, they've really made an instant impact. And I made a list of the deflection leaders through four games for the Suns, and D'Anthony Melton, our guy, leads them in with nine, tied with TJ Warren in 50 less minutes. They both have nine. Josh Jackson and Mikal Bridges have six. Devin Booker has five in four games. Jamal Crawford has four. Kelly Oubre had four in one game last night. DeAndre Ayton, as a big man, has three deflections in four games. So it seems like the loose ball trend, like we were talking about, I think Rashawn Holmes, I think 2 weeks ago, that we wanted this contagious energy from Rashawn Holmes would spread around the team. But I think just overall, just I think this young team is buying into one another. I think they're finally buying in to Igor Kokoschkov's system, because I think it took a little bit adjustment period at the beginning of the season for that.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, I've seen a lot of piling on Trevor Ariza, and some of it's fair. We've definitely called him out on a game or two, if not more, this season on this podcast. But I do think it's a little bit overblown, because just like he wasn't intended to really come in and entirely be the reason this team was winning, you can't say that him leaving is the entire team, the entire reason this team is now winning. But I think that that thing you're getting at is exactly where I do feel that impact of Ariza's departure is chemistry, you know, understanding and trusting one another. I think Ariza came in and did his job every day, but I don't get the impression he was somebody sticking around to really develop connections with these guys. You know, not only was he on a 1-year deal, but I think the writing was on the wall for him to be traded at some point anyway. So I don't think statistically or, you know, rotation wise, Ariza's departure is just this breath of fresh air. But I do think in the little ways you see this team kind of playing and fighting for one another, contesting every shot, even when a weak link pops up in a defensive possession, or, you know, team rebounding has been a real strength for this team, not just Ayton and Holmes, but other guys chipping in there. That's been something that was missing prior to this streak. So I think that it's kind of, you know, another wrinkle here is just how impressive it is that a really young team, that putting the young players from D'Anthony Melton to Mikal Bridges on the court more has somehow corresponded to more wins. That's kind of the opposite of what you tend to expect.
Yeah, it kind of just goes to show, like, for people that want to be here, like, it was obvious true reason they want to be here once they got really down the dumps in the start of the season. Then you add in Kelly Oubre, who's motivated and wants to prove a point. It makes such a big difference. But I don't know if you call into this, Brent. I was just scouring through some advanced stats while you were talking there. And the Suns are actually, over this 4-game winning streak, they rank fourth in offensive rebound percentage. I know we touched on it last night with DeAndre Ayton. He had 8 offensive rebounds. But again, that's another hustle thing, Brendan, because if you're attacking the offensive glass, that means you're hustling pretty hard.
Yeah, I agree. I did notice that one too. And I think, you know, having some size on the court clearly helps. I think that's been one of the upgrades from having D'Anthony Melton on the floor as opposed to Isaiah Kanan has been. Melton just plays bigger and obviously is bigger, has longer arms, all of that, physically just a more gifted player and uses that better. So I think that's been one of the biggest strengths there, even with Melton not always impacting the box score, not always even getting his own, you know, 5 or 6 rebounds a night, although he has had nights where he's up there. It's just the kind of collective effect and impact of the guys that are on the court kind of all playing similarly and buying in is really showing up. But we should dive into some of the players here in a second too, because there's been a few guys on this team kind of balling out.
Oh, that's for sure. We'll go into the stats here in just a moment. But before we do that, I want to tell you guys, as I always do, about the Locked On NBA Twitter account. If you're not already following it, pause this podcast, go over to your Twitter app and type in @LockedOnNBAnet. Give them a follow, because it's really a really fun, valuable resource for me, Brendan. We follow it as well. And also a lot of the Locked On hosts, you can follow along with. Outside of Phoenix, I know you guys love following along with me and Brendan on Locked On Suns, but there's so many other great podcasts around the network, also a lot of great follows around the network. So if you're not already doing so, I really hope you're doing @LockedOnNBAnet, because like I said, you should be following it. And it's really been fun to watch the growth of the Twitter account, also the network as a whole. So really hope you guys get on the bandwagon here with Locked On NBA Net and give them a follow.
And let's also talk about Homie, one of the most fun and interesting new ideas for buying and selling a house. And I want to really dial down. You've heard me talking about these guys for a while, and it does tend to sound right like some of these other ideas you've heard, but Homie is completely different. It's not like an OfferPad or Opendoor that's going to try to make money off of helping you. And it doesn't even feel like help in that case. What they're going to do is provide you with a team of realtors and attorneys, as well as all of the tools on their mobile app and their website to make the home buying experience easier, and they're going to make it cheaper. So Homie can sell any priced home for the same low cost of just $199 to list and just $1,299 at close. So that means on average, Homie customers save over $10,000. These guys recently sold a $1 million home in record time, saving the homeowner over $60,000. When you buy a home with Homie, you can qualify as well for up to $5,000 on a buyer refund to help with those pesky closing costs. So not only do you get to save money, but you can get some on the back end too to make all of this hassle that usually goes into buying a house pretty much non-existent with Homie. Their motto here is, we've got your back, and they're coming into Phoenix to show you exactly that. What we're going to do for you if you go check out Homie coming from us is get you $100 off, an extra $100 off that listing fee of $199. And we have a phone number for you, changing it up here. It's not going to be that Locked On promo code. It's going to be a phone number you're going to call here to get $100 off that listing fee. And it is 602-892-3335. That's 602-892-3335 to get $100 off your listing fee over at homie.com or on the Homie mobile app when you list your house to sell. Go check Homie out and tell them you came from us by using that phone number. All righty, so let's dive into some of these players, and I think you nailed it. The guy that stands out to me most is going to be TJ Warren. He's averaging 24.5 points, 4.5 rebounds on 50-50-93 shooting. 50% from three is really the one that stands out there, taking them like we've been talking about for a while with no hesitance, and just looks really dialed in as a scorer. Even on a night like yesterday when he had 7 of 20 shooting from the field, it really didn't feel like he was struggling.
No, not at all. I mean, I think he was making an impact on defense as well. I think the active hands, and like this, the contagiousness we were talking about in the last segment, it's spreading over to TJ as well. And that's a really great sight to see. He's averaging 1.5 steals and almost a block per game. And that's a really good sight to see. But off topic here a little bit, Brendan, but with how much TJ Warren's improved his three-point shooting, I think he's close to 47% this year on threes. Should the Suns hire David West's little brother on the coaching staff here?
For real. And we should shout out too, Michael Pina over at Vice Sports had a really interesting, he does a weekly kind of like Zach Lowe's 10 things. He does a roundup across the league, but goes a little even more in depth on each of his little nuggets that he's noticing. And he got TJ to open up a little bit about the shooting. And for the first time, I've really heard him talk about how it was so much of a mental block for him. He felt so comfortable getting shots up and making shots around the basket that he never felt like he really needed to do it. And it was a combination of David West and his nephew and even the coaching staff in Phoenix, the new coaching staff coming in and encouraging him and just kind of breaking down, like, your life on the court will be so much easier if you can take these in shots and make them at a high clip. And I think he's definitely reaping the benefits of that. And it shows up because it's so tough to guard him now.
And I think also, if I'm not mistaken, Bobby Marks tweeted, I think 2 days ago, that there were some clause in his contract where if he puts up some sort of 3-point attempt number and a 3-point percentage, he gets like $500,000 bonus. So that's a nice little boost to improve your 3-pointer a little bit.
Yeah. I also, we should go to Booker too, because I didn't even realize, I mean, he had the one outstanding scoring night against the Knicks, but 30.3 points, 6.3 rebounds, and 5.7 assists on 48% from the field, 38% from three, and 85% from the line. That's the Booker we were expecting coming into the year.
Oh, absolutely. And I think what I wanted to hone in on for those numbers as well, because it just kind of shows us how unique of a scorer Devin Booker is. Look at the three-point attempts and the free throw attempts. 7 3-point attempts per game, 9 free throw attempts per game. Now, like you said, Brent, that's the old Booker that we do know.
Yeah, it's pretty impressive too. I mean, we talked about his defense yesterday. It felt like a lot of times this year, and maybe it was, you know, he said as much that he hadn't played a healthy game this season, and maybe you just chalk it up to that, but he seems like he has just more stamina and energy. You know what I mean? Igor's been a little smarter too about finding pockets of time where he can rest, and he's not overdoing it with the minutes. And it helps when you have a little more talent on the roster to kind of plug those holes when he's not in the game. I think about last night's third quarter, there are about 3 minutes or so there when basically it was just TJ Warren on the court that was really a creator. Jamal Crawford as well, but last night was a little off for him scoring the ball. And Warren just kind of kept the offense afloat just enough, and the defense was up to its usual standard. And that's helped Booker too. But even when he's on the court, I think I feel like I noticed that he's kind of able to give more consistent effort on both sides of the ball. And it shows up because he can go into a fourth quarter and take over a game, and it doesn't feel like it's killing, you know?
I feel like also we'll hit on De'Anthony Melton a little bit later, just from a, not like a negative standpoint, but his shooting right now, he's sub 35% from the field, sub 30% from 3-point line. But having a guy like De'Anthony Melton and Jamal Crawford out there to take some of the playmaking burden off of Booker and allowing him to be like his old self, going off catch and shoot opportunities. When we saw like exclusively point Book, Brennan, I don't think we really saw him running around, snaking around screens, getting these wide open looks.
Yeah, he's at 7 3-point attempts per game over these past four, which is really nice number to see. Getting up, honestly, as close to 10 as possible, getting him to that Klay Thompson mold. I mean, we know he's a different player than Klay, and that playmaking ability shouldn't be ignored, but it's not, because you see he's taking 7 threes a game, but he's still getting to almost 6 assists. So the versatility is there, and he's not going to, you know, forget how to pass the ball just because he's playing a little more off ball. And Igor's system, we always were so excited by it and how Booker would fit into it because of that, because he puts multiple guys in position to make plays at the end of possessions. And we knew Booker would be perfect for it. And I think we're seeing that a lot. To go to De'Anthony Melton and then on to the next guy that we wanted to hit, or that I wanted to hit here at least, was Melton is interesting, because I think the playmaking is really on offense where his impact is being felt most, which is sort of surprising just because he wasn't a pure point guard in college. And, you know, you kind of expect guys to take a little bit feeling out the game as rookies. And even in their first few years, we saw that with Eliakobo, of course, already this season. And Melton's comfort making plays for the team is impressive. 5 assists yesterday without really making an impact almost anywhere else on the box score. You look and all of a sudden you see 5 assists, and it's really impressive. And to move on to DeAndre Ayton, who I think is benefiting more than almost anyone else from that. Ayton's at 17.3 points and 12 rebounds per game throughout this winning streak on 54% shooting from the field and 81% from the line. And a few people tweeted out Ayton's highlights from last night's game against the Celtics when he pretty much dominated. We talked about it last night, 23 and 18 for him in that one. Melton set him up. I think like 3 or 4 of Melton's assists were directly to Ayton getting easy little dump offs around the basket. And that chemistry, to go back to our first segment, is awesome to watch.
Yeah, it's really actually interesting that De'Anthony Melton just comes up from Naz Suns and just all of a sudden seems like he has the best chemistry with DeAndre Ayton right off the bat. But to go to DeAndre Ayton really quickly, you named off the stats there, 17.3 points, 12 rebounds per game, half a block per game. But this is all in 28.2 minutes. He's really producing at a high clip, and it seems like 13 shot attempts as well in 28 minutes. He's getting more comfortable, I think, as a primary scoring option as the days and months go on.
Yeah, and I've seen the conversation a little bit about, you know, there was a while where Holmes was kind of outplaying him. And, you know, should we start Holmes just to send him a message? We saw that happen once in Portland, but I think that was a little more to it than just who was playing better. And it was awesome to watch Ayton's response to that over these past couple of weeks. And I think that now becoming a strength for this team to have Holmes be there to be able to handle 20, 25 minutes. And, you know, maybe you ease up on Holmes' minutes here and there when Ayton's having a nice night. And obviously he's the centerpiece of this franchise and Holmes is clearly the backup, but James Jones said in an interview with The Athletic yesterday that he's one of the things he's really liked as far as the chemistry of this team is how much those two guys support each other. And so that's nice to see. And Corliss Williamson seems to be doing something right with those two guys because they've both come out of the gates really the whole year, exceeded expectations, and especially during this stretch, played out of their minds. So having somebody where you're not seeing a huge drop off when Ayton sits on the bench is a luxury not a lot of teams have when there's so many centers that really don't fit in the modern NBA and are trying to find a place. The Suns have two.
Yeah, that's for sure. And I think it's really going to be a fun rotation to watch moving forward with the big guys. And hopefully they re-sign Rashawn Holmes. I think I've said it here on the podcast already, but that should be on their near the top of their priority list this summer. But one final player I wanted to hit on with you, Brennan, was Josh Jackson. I think he's been the most underrated guy on this streak. He's averaging 11.3 points, 6.5 rebounds, 2.5 assists, 0.8 steals and a block in 27.6 minutes. But the big number here is 46.2% from three on 3.3 attempts per game. The weird quirk here is that he's shooting 37.8% from the field. So he must be shooting horrendously from 2-point percentage. But I actually, I went back and scaled it back to the whole month of this number. Like Josh Jackson, he's actually shooting 42% this entire month on catch and shoot threes. If that maintains, that's going to change his trajectory a little bit.
Yeah, I think that Jackson is the guy that I wanted to hit on too because of the bench. I put some net rating numbers down, just individual guys, the way the team's playing per 100 possessions with them on the court. And Jackson is, if I wrote it down correctly, the tops on the team. He's plus 22.4 per 100 possessions so far during these past four games. And it's not just him. I mean, he's the highest, but the entire bench has been playing really, really well. Holmes and Jamal Crawford are both right around 21, plus 21. So I think he's kind of setting the mood and the style for the second unit, upping the tempo a little bit, making defensive plays, creating easy offense that way. And I think that it's impressive to watch him do that and kind of simplify the game, because that's what we've been saying for really a couple of years now, is hoping that eventually he figures that out so that he's able to just be more of a positive. And we're seeing that during this stretch.
Yeah, that's for sure. And I think one more thing on Josh Jackson is just the overall consistency over the past four games. And I feel like I'll throw it back to you for this question, Brennan, but we've been talking for the entire season about Josh Jackson struggling to find a role on this team within Igor's system. But I think as an energizer bunny in the second unit, kind of leading that entire five-man unit, he makes a lot of sense as a six-man energy kind of guy.
I think no one is hoping more that he figures it out than you and I. I know you especially were really excited about him coming out of Kansas, and he's been disappointing, but the learning curve is very, very slow for him, it seems. And maybe there's some things we just have to give up on him figuring out. And, you know, maybe he's not going to be an all-star, but he's growing his game in exactly the ways you would hope if you assume kind of he's not going to get to that level of a player. You know, he's buying into a bench role, which was something he maybe could have struggled with last year a little bit, it looked like. And, you know, not trying to be a go-to scorer, you know, maybe that end of the season stretch last year where he was putting up huge point totals and taking any shot he wanted, maybe that wasn't the best for him, because, you know, we're seeing him stay effective, probably being even more valuable to his team right now in a limited role, doing the little things that he does, than he ever was at the end of last season, trying to kind of Superman his way into, you know, 25s and fives. And it just looks a lot more smoother. It looks like this is really the player he was supposed to be. Like we've said a couple times here on the show, you know, Kansas Josh Jackson. And that's really what I think we're seeing. But to go to our last segment, you kind of tease some of the interesting stuff we're going to look at there, just as far as how sustainable this all is. You know, is Jackson a guy who's going to keep this going? Can the Suns' hot shooting on from some of their players keep up? And we'll talk about that in a second. But before we move on, I want to talk to you guys about the Locked On NBA show. Been plugging these incredible people and hosts for quite a while now. You'll learn something new every time you check out this show. It's 5 days a week, little bite-sized episodes, just like we do here on Locked On Suns, to keep you up to date on all the NBA news, from the Trevor Ariza signing or trade on Monday, to some input on the Nuggets hot streak. Saw that Adam Mares is a host of Locked On NBA. He's the site expert over at Denver Stiffs of SB Nation. So there's a whole bunch of voices with a whole bunch of information that you won't find anywhere else. So go check out Locked On NBA and give them a subscribe, just like you give to us. All right. So the thing I dove into to try to see, because I've hinted at it a couple times, is three-point shooting. That can sometimes be the real difference. Obviously, we've gone into, there's more to it than that. But it does bear mentioning, because the Suns are allowing opponents to take 36 three-point attempts per game. Now, they played Dallas and Boston, who both put up a ton of threes, so it does have to do with the opponent to a certain degree, but they're allowing only 25.4% three-point percentage over these four games, and only Indiana is allowing a worse percentage over this stretch, and that's uncharacteristically low. Suns opponents for the whole season are making 34%, right around, a little just below league average, but right around league average. That's pretty normal, but 25% during this stretch does make you wonder, you know, if teams start going back to normal there, the scores will at least be closer and it'll be a little harder on the Suns. We might not see the 10-point wins. We might have to, you know, they might have to fight it out a little more at the very least.
Yeah, I alluded to this actually in our roundtable. I think I was posting within the hour on Bright Side of the Sun. And I mentioned that just it seems like the effort as far as closing out on guys is making a huge difference. So guys like Josh Jackson, Jamal Crawford, Devin Booker. Sometimes I notice, like, in an early part of the season, they would just haphazardly go after a guy who's wide open from three. But now it just seems like they're locked in, they're buying in. And it just seems like a simple effort switch is flipped, Brennan. And I think that just makes all the difference here.
I do. Yeah, I do think so. And you feel the youth there too. I think that's one of the areas where if you can have young guys who know what they're doing on the court, read the game a little bit, maybe even having some older rookies helps. Not Ayton necessarily, but Bridges and Melton both are not your typical 19-year-old one-and-done guys. Bridges is 22 years old and Melton's, I think, 20. So I think that helps to have those young guys who are going to play hard, who have the athleticism and the quickness to move around the court, but also, you know, have the length like those guys do. So I mentioned last night, there was a block. I'm almost positive Bridges blocked this, or the guy just had, you know, no chance at this shot, but pretty much a dead play. And it looked like an open three for Boston, and Bridges just soared into the corner. I think it was Terry Rozier, but Bridges just swatted at it and it hit the bottom of the net. And shots like that, I think that is another place that you feel the departure of Trevor Ariza. He's somebody who didn't always make that second effort.
Yeah, that's for sure. And I think another guy we should hit on here as far as trends go with this team is Kelly Oubre Jr. He had four deflections last night, two blocks and a steal. He was all over the place. He had put together maybe one of the best performances from a defender all year from a Suns perspective in his debut. But I wanted to ask you, do you think Oubre's defensive energy maintains here? Because with a 7'3" wingspan on a 6'7" frame, he really does fit as an energizer kind of stretch four guy who can play alongside Josh Jackson, the second unit.
I liked the Bridges, Jackson, Oubre lineup that they went to with Booker at point guard and Ayton at center. That, I think, can really, especially from a defensive perspective, that's something they should explore more, having that much length on the court. Because even if you think about it, Booker, when he's defending smaller guys, has a length and size advantage that can be, you know, useful for him. So I really like what they were able to do. I don't know if it's necessarily a huge departure from what Ariza provided to them, but, you know, Oubre felt pretty energized last night. You could, you know, he's doing silly stuff like, you know, kissing, blowing a kiss at the rim when he shot the free throw. He was feeling himself a little bit last night. And I think, you know, if he treats this like a contract year more than he did in Washington, or, you know, maybe this is just a better environment for him to do that, I think you could definitely see him putting together a really, really valuable performance. And whether or not the Suns re-sign him or whatever, that's a conversation for a different day. But it feels like he can provide something pretty unique and special and versatile for this team going forward. And that's, you know, something they didn't necessarily have, especially off the bench.
Yeah, he makes a lot of sense if he does stay around long-term as a second unit piece. But it will be interesting to see the contract figure gets this summer, because it really all depends. I'm not really comfortable going like the mid-teens range for a guy like him yet. But we'll have to, like you said, Brent, we'll be on the monitor through the rest of the season. But as far as another trend goes, Brent, I feel like four straight wins, it could be five on Saturday against the Wizards. Then they play against Brooklyn and Orlando. That Brooklyn game, by the way, could be one of the two hottest teams in the NBA going against each other. I don't think anyone thought that 2 weeks ago. But after this road stand, Brent, their next seven games on at home are against Oklahoma City, Denver, Golden State, Philadelphia, Los Angeles Clippers, Charlotte Hornets, and Sacramento Kings. That's five or six or even seven playoff teams right there. And I think as far as sustainability goes, maybe they won't win all those games. Obviously, they won't win all those games, but I'm hoping at least there's not a blowout in there. I think they could at least keep these games competitive moving forward.
Yeah, I mean, we've seen them stay competitive with, you know, the Thunder and the Clippers in the past. And I think, you know, Sacramento, the last three quarters of that game were pretty competitive. And that was when the Suns had far less than their full roster. And, you know, even the Hornets, I think that's clearly a winnable game if the Suns play up to their current standard. Boston's a better team than that. And you could even make the case Dallas might be better than Charlotte. So, you know, that's the other thing we should mention before we get out of here is four games. Like, yeah, they beat Minnesota. That's probably going to be their partner near the bottom of the West here pretty soon as the new wing bounce. I don't know what you would call the Jimmy Butler ouster there and how it impacted the team, but they seem to be falling back down to earth a little bit. But they beat Dallas, who's probably going to make the playoffs, clearly could make the playoffs. And they beat Boston, who is a good team, maybe a, you know, finals team if they get it figured out. So this wasn't beating up on lesser competition. And I'm really excited for that Nets game, because I think here in the next week or so, that's clearly the one to watch. That's the best team they'll face, and another really hot squad that's really young, kind of plays with the same energy. That'll be really fun.
Yeah, that's for sure. Anything else you want to hit on today as far as trends or any individual rankings over the past four games for the Suns on this win streak?
No, I look forward to Washington and Brooklyn. That's going to be an awesome back-to-back between the Ariza-Oubre battle and that Nets game we just talked about. I'm excited, and I hope the fans are feeling this team a little more than they did, because I think we've all earned it, keeping track of these guys for as long as we have, to get something to talk about, something to get excited about.
Yeah, it's still crazy to say, Brandon, that this is the first time the Suns have not only had a three-game winning streak, but a four-game winning streak since we started doing this podcast about a year and a half, 2 years ago. So hopefully this momentum keeps going here. We'll be back with you guys tomorrow for our latest episode.